The Primitive Church. The Primitive Church of the New Testament represents in its work and worship a pattern for the church in all ages. The Scriptures in 1 Corinthians 10 and 11 tell us how the Christians of that day observed the communion. Writings immediately following the apostolic days indicate that with very few exceptions, the teaching of the Lord's emissaries continued to be followed. We give here a brief example taken from The Voice of One Crying in the Wilderness by J.D. Phillips. The following quotations from the Fathers show that the use of one cup by each congregation was the almost universal practice during this period, A.D. 70 to A.D. 430. Was the primitive church wrong? Credat Judaeus appella, non ego, as Alexander Campbell used to say. Let Judaeus appella believe it, not I. A.D. 70 to A.D. 107. Ignatius, a bishop of the church at Antioch, where the disciples were first called Christians, Acts 11, verse 26, from A.D. 70 till his martyrdom in A.D. 107, just 1 year after John's death, writing to the church at Philadelphia, a church established in apostolic time, says, "There is one flesh of our Lord Jesus Christ and one cup in the unity, Greek, henosis, of his blood." Antonicene Fathers, Volume 1, page 81. Again, one loaf is broken for them all, and one cup is distributed among them all. Henosis is here rendered unity, uniting, etc. It points distinctly to that specific idea which Paul expressed when he says, "The cup is the communion of Christ's blood," 1 Corinthians 10, 16, says Charles P. Crouth. A.D. 100 to A.D. 165. Justin Martyr was born about the year 100 and died a martyr for Christ, A.D. 165. Doubtless he heard the apostles preach and worshipped with churches established by them. He says, "There is then brought to the president of the brethren bread and a cup of wine." Antonicene Fathers, Volume 1, page 185. That each church in Justin's day used one cup is evident, for in speaking of the matter with Trypho the Jew, he says, "So he speaks of the Gentiles, that is, of us who in every place offer sacrifices to him, that is, the bread of the Eucharist, and also the cup of the Eucharist." Trypho, chapter 41. Again, "The sacrifice which we offer in his name, according to the commandment of Jesus Christ, that is, in the Eucharist of the bread and of the cup, and which are offered by Christians in all places throughout the world." Trypho, chapter 1:17. The apostles, in the memoirs composed by them, have delivered unto us what was enjoined upon them, that Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, said, "This do in remembrance of me, this is my body." And that after the same manner, having taken the cup and given thanks, he said, "This is my blood," and gave it to them alone, which the wicked demons have imitated in the mysteries of Mithras, commanding the same thing to be done. For that bread and cup of water are placed with certain incantations in the mystic rites of one who is being initiated, you either know or can learn. Antonicene Fathers, Volume 1, page 185. A.D. 130 to A.D. 258. Cyprian, a, quote, "glorious martyr whom to read is to know and to know is to love," unquote, was martyred in the year 258 A.D. Reasoning with one who had used water instead of wine, he says, "Since Christ says, 'I am the true vine,' the blood of Christ is not therefore water but wine. Nor can his blood appear to be in the cup by which we have been redeemed and made alive when the wine is absent from the chalice by which the blood of Christ is shown forth." Ad caecilium Dominici Calicis, Epistle 63. He speaks of the wine of the chalice, Cyprian, Epistle 62. Again, he says, "seeing that they drink the cup of Christ's blood," Cyprian, Ad caecilium, Chapter 16. A.D. 340 to A.D. 397. Ambrose, one of the most renowned of the early Christian writers, born at Traves, Gaul, A.D. 340, was bishop at Milan from 370 till his death in 397. He was exceedingly sound for a man of his day. He was one of the most eloquent of all those who protested against the corruptions of the rapidly developing Church of Rome, or Mystery Babylon the Great. The renowned Augustine was his pupil. Both acknowledged but two ordinances, baptism and communion. Ambrose denied the Romish doctrine of transubstantiation and openly denounced the worship of images as paganism. He says, "We, receiving the loaf and one cup, are receivers and partakers of the body of the Lord." Again, "With what rashness dost thou, Emperor Theodosius, take with thy mouth the cup of precious blood, when by the fury of thy words innocent blood has been spilt?" Theodorus Historica Ecclesiastica, volume 17. Again, "Wine is put into the cup." Book of the Sacraments, 54, chapter 40. A.D. 347 to A.D. 407. Chrysostom, a bishop of Constantinople, was born about the year 347 and died in 407. He says, "One body," compare 1 Corinthians 10:17, J.D. Phillips, "is now available for all, and one cup." Ancient Liturgy of the Church of Antioch, translated by Mr. Hammond. Again, "That which is in the cup is that which flowed from his side." 1 Corinthians, Homily 24. Again, "The table was not of silver, the chalice was not of gold, in which Christ gave his blood to his disciples to drink, and yet everything there was truly fit to inspire all." Homily on Matthew, number 1. A.D. 407 to A.D. 430. Augustine, admittedly the greatest of the four Latin fathers, more profound than Ambrose his spiritual father, more original and systematic than Jerome his contemporary and correspondent, born in A.D. 354 and died in 430, says, "Receive in the cup that which was shed from Christ's side." Ad Neophotos 1. These quotations demonstrate the general practice of that time period. There were, of course, exceptions. As we have already pointed out, some churches began their departure earlier than others, and some were more aggressive in their acceptance of error than their contemporaries. The dark mantle of apostasy was soon to cover the entirety of the religious world, and for a long period of time the young, energetic Church of our Lord, for all visible purposes, would be lost. It was the work, foresight, and intense desire of the reformers that lit the candle of hope in the hearts of a truth-hungry world. Noble works by men from various parts of the earth would ultimately break the chains of error's bondage. A new day would dawn, a new era begin. Historically, however, it seems that this movement of courage and hope had hardly begun before the angry winds of discouragement and division wrought havoc among its people. Little by little, ever so slowly at first, but ever so surely, the movement began to disintegrate and fall apart. Love was replaced by hatred, trust by suspicion, unity by division. We shall devote the next three chapters to a discussion of issues that became causes of division among the disciples. First, instrumental music, then the Sunday school, and finally the introduction of individual cups.